Hello everyone and welcome to our webinar today. I'm Kara Knox, Senior Director with Lumeris, and it's my pleasure to host this presentation of Health Plan Operations, Identifying the Definitive Components for Business and Care Delivery Excellence, along with Managed Healthcare Executive. Our speaker today is Richard Jones, an experienced healthcare business executive and certified public accountant. Richard is President and CEO of Essence Healthcare, one of the nation's first accountable delivery systems in St. Louis. He also leads Lumeris Healthcare Outcomes, which offers full turnkey business process outsourcing and management services to support MA and commercial health plans. Prior to Lumeris, Richard served as National President of United Healthcare, Medicare, and Medicaid Lines of Business, President and CEO of Coventry Healthcare of the Midwest, and Chief Financial Officer of Coventry Corporation. As part of our agenda today, Richard will cover the role of health plan operations and population health services in value-based models, a four-part framework for success based on Lumeris' 10-year track record of operating a consistently high-rated Medicare Advantage health plan, and clinical and financial results possible when the framework is enabled. Now, before we get started, we do have a few housekeeping items to cover. We have three poll questions for you today, and we'll provide brief instruction on how to submit your responses at the time of each poll. For the Q&A, we'll be taking questions at the end of the presentation using the Q&A feature on the right-hand side of your screen. If you have any questions for Richard, you're welcome to submit those via Q&A feature at any time. Lastly, we'll be sending a thank you message and a link to the on-demand recording of the presentation. However, please note, a copy of the slide deck will not be available. Richard, I'm now pleased to turn the session over to you to get started.
Thank you, Kara. The title and the topic, the role of operations in value-based models, is quite an ambitious topic for us to go through in a short period of time. So by the nature of it, I'm going to try and frame it and describe it. By the very limitation of time, we might not get into the level of detail that you desire, but if you have questions, please reserve them for the end and we'll try and get into them. So as we look at the next slide, this slide, we've seen many versions of this. I think everybody has one of these and or has seen one. Hopefully I'll add some helpful commentary to it for a minute as it relates to population health management and sort of the progression from left to right that I think the industry is moving through right now. Fee-for-service, as we all know, is based on a unit cost reimbursement. It generally has few population health or outcome-oriented reimbursements or otherwise. As we move to the right, pay-for-performance is a value-based reimbursement that offers providers up bonus payments. And in a lot of cases throughout the country, we see that some of those are related to qualifications or structures, not so much outcomes. We've seen that the patient-centered medical home frequently results in a P4P, but it rarely relates to changes in the outcomes. While those are very credible models from which to operate, sometimes they're more oriented on the structure than the outcome. When we look at shared savings, it gets to be more meaningful, and changes in the care delivery model are necessary to achieve some of these results. This gives, though, and this is important in these first three models, the fee-for-service, pay-for-performance, and shared savings, there's no downside. This is really an upside and doesn't require as much attention to the cost overall. As we move to shared savings, the care delivery transformation, when there is both an upside and a downside, and in many cases the difference between shared savings and the global payment next is that gains, income, and or downside risk exist in a corridor. So it's somewhat limited, but it still has downside risk, and transformation of the model is necessary, is appropriate to take on that type of risk. And then we see the global payment percentage of premium or global cap. That results in an unlimited downside loss, so it's very important to have an organization that is prepared and structurally capable of taking on that type of loss. So as we look at this, the movement from left to right are very important in terms of, one, how you manage the tools, culture, and organization that you operate in. So in value-based operations, for payers transitioning to increasingly higher levels of risk, for providers to evolving payment models from volume to value, it's a significant shift. It's not an inconsequential change. Health plan operations, as you move farther to the right, need to be redesigned in order to provide that different business model for those care delivery outcomes. For health plans or health systems wanting to become their own payer or turnkey out, there are turnkey outsource offerings, and an expert to support that process, I think, is quite important to design, build, operate, implement, and optimize those value-based health plan operations. The goals of that and the evidence of that are achieved through higher revenue, lower cost, higher market share, and meeting the mandates of the new ACA. The 85% truly, according to how you, health plans or providers have been operating in the past, may require structural changes in how they're looking at what they're doing and transactional processing and sharing of information that needs to occur. While this list looks intuitive, it looks small, it looks, I mean, it's short enough, it's simple enough, but it's not, it may be simple, but it's not easy. Without a collaborative payer-provider partnership, an expert partner, that transition will be too sequential, and if it starts off bad, it is hard to recover. It can be too complicated, and too often it can be too ambiguous. The decisions around structure of how you're doing this, and I'll talk more about that as we go through, care management, if without definition, and while it looks simple, without clear definition, they can lead to uninformed or incomplete processes. Expert support allows the solution and the transformation by someone, by a party, by programs with proven results. And I think it becomes very important to have the most fully informed partner that can provide context, connection, timely, actionable information for all documentation, for cost optimization, high quality, and best outcomes. It's good to have more of a prescriptive process to go and create those workflows, the handoffs between payer provider, the clinical systems that inform clinicians around population health management, and the activities that are required. The next slide, at least a portion of it is quite familiar to all of us. This is the triple aim plus one, which is how we operate. The ability to meet the goals of triple aim plus one, which is, I believe, very important in terms of you've got to have a goal, a vision, a practice model to do that. As we go through this, I will repeat myself on this as we go through this. I don't want this to sound general. When we look at this, you need to identify a population that you're going to apply this to. And it needs to be aligned for that population around the financial risk and the reimbursement and the clear definition of which population that is. But as we look at this, in fact, it is achievable to reduce per capita cost of care, improve the health care of the population, and provide for a higher level of satisfaction for individuals, and the plus one that we add, increasing physician satisfaction, being the partner of choice for the physicians and clinicians that you work with. What we in Lumeris Healthcare Outcomes do, we believe we do, we intend to do, is offer a definitive formula for value-based health operations in a shared risk or global payment models. There are many features of this which would be applicable in the other three settings that we described, but today we're going to talk about the shared risk and the global capitation. Strategic investments around being capable to do this are very important. Unless they're well managed, they can be inappropriate. It's very important to have a point of view on this, to have an approach. Our point of view is informed by the ACA, that healthcare is moving from a fee-for-service setting to a shared risk and accountability between provider and payer, where they share responsibility for costs, quality, and outcomes. And so as a backstop to everything we talk about, our point of view will reflect those basic assumptions. So, Kira.
Yes, so we have our first poll question for you right here. So which of the following is most important in order for health plans with shared risk or global payment contracts that Richard just spoke of to achieve business and care delivery transformation? So we have four answers for you. A is cultural alignment, B is revenue management, C is provider readiness, and D is risk adjustment. So if you would, make your selections there on your screen, and we will give everyone a few seconds to do that. So again, we're looking for the best answer. We realize there might be more than one answer in some of these polls, but go ahead and select your best answer and then press submit. And we will reveal the answers here. Aha! So we see the majority of folks have said cultural alignment, Richard.
Well, great answer. I was trying to figure out whether I was Vanna White or Pat Sajak during that. But this is very important. This is a very important issue because in the effort to go from fee for service or volume to value, there are so many things that can be done, and they are point solutions. From experience, unless an organization is prepared to embrace that, they rarely come to any real value or consequence. What comes first is an organization who's embracing that they are making this change. Software is not enough. Data is not enough. The combination is powerful, but I would even say that creating, having the culture and creating the incentives that reward the specific behaviors that get the outcomes you're looking for is the most powerful way to achieve and make that cross the chasm between value and volume. So as you look at it, you need to a culture that aligns incentives throughout the system, that incents those important measures them in a public, visible way, tracks them on a regular basis, gives feedback on how to improve when they're not being achieved, and then working together for work plans. I've been in the industry so long, it used to be a health plan regular reaction to arrive at the physician office and say, you really did a bad job, I want you to get better, bye. And then that day is gone. We need to be collaborative and specific with data, evidence-based solutions, and any choice less than the combination of culture, beginning with culture, adding incentives, being transparent, will yield, I believe, less of an answer. Behaviors have to change. Okay. So the proven framework, and I'm going to start off with a comment. Sorry, I went too fast. I'm right there. The proven framework, we've got four items here, but the backdrop of this, and you'll hear it throughout some of the other comments, is that these are all applied to a specific and clearly defined population of patients and or members. And once that is done, it provides the lens to understand how to do this. I'd say without that, this is ambiguous and confusing. But once you've identified that population, you identify the improvement opportunities to address business transformation. You look at the organizational structure and implementation of transformation. value-based care services that support office management. And I'm going to say, when you hear that, and I may actually say this a couple of times, the workflow of the clinician, because we have to be additive and leverage, not deleverage, the clinician and population health, and then collaborative payer operations that optimize the business processes. The revenue, the cost, the patterns of care are all important in this. The organizational structure is very important. That does not mean there is only one. When you work with a group of independent physicians in an IPA, the goals are always the same, but the process and the structure will likely be different than when you're working with a health system with employed physicians. And that, as long as you maintain those principles, there are methodologies to have success with both. So I want to be clear that to do this, there has to be an organization, a clinically integrated network, a PHO, a health system, an IPA, or something, some organization who can take the risk. And I mentioned this, and it is important. As clinicians work with many payers, it's not unlikely that most payers bring in a slightly different workflow. They say, look at our information in this way. We want you to incorporate and do this for our members. What happens as they, as offices and clinicians and physicians do that, they're always going to adopt based on the biggest value. And if those are all, if those are deleveraging, they're going to become, it's going to become an enmity relationship rather than a collaborative. So leveraging their time, leveraging their resources, giving them more capacity rather than less capacity is very important. And the, some of the tools that we'll talk about in our system actually do leverage that up. The, as we look at this, the process to appropriately coordinate with the payer operations, it, the goal should be not to duplicate services, to eliminate duplication of care. It should be informed by and informed and informing each other, the clinician and the payer, providing and facilitating timely and informed handoffs of patients and patient information to settings of care and reconciling care and orders, especially in transition of care out of the hospital or into the hospital. So it's it is a big process, but programmatically, if you know where to start and how to move through it, it is manageable. So next we'll talk about the component business. The care delivery transformation requires a great deal of communication. And literally here we're going to talk about when we actually perform this, there are two transformations. There is the clinical transformation and the handoffs and the transparency and the connectivity, and there's the business planning transformation in terms of compensation, incentives, contracting, and shared risk, and the constant feedback loop and reinforcement and communication around both of those workflows. So identify improvement opportunities to address business transformation. A comprehensive qualitative and quantitative analysis of an organization's business and care delivery model. It's not uncommon when talking to a physician group that irrespective of anything else, when you mention that there might be more revenue involved, the answer is yes. What needs to happen is not to be motivated around the dollars, but to have a true capability assessment. What are the capabilities? What are the assets? What's the, how do you evaluate that? To actually give risk at the appropriate level at the appropriate time. Global payment may be a goal, but not an organization may not today be ready for it. So there needs to be an informed analysis of the organization that will be taking the risk, their capability, their leadership, and their governance, and baseline and level set that to determine where to start. Failure to do this is frequently the result of conversational evaluation and conclusion. This needs to be a significant evaluation with a valid conclusion. failure around this first choice is permanent failure in that relationship with that clinician. Then the services, data-driven opportunity analysis, financial modeling, provider contract structure and incentives, and health plan benefit design. The evaluation of critical components needed to be effective in the value-based model. You need to have adequate data to perform. You need to have the financial opportunity to perform, and need to be clear about what are those opportunities specifically. They need to inform the action plan and potentially the structure, but they certainly need to inform the reporting process and the cycle of how the information gets communicated, reinforced, and how frequently it's available. The essential guidance: identify a value-based care business transformation expert. I won't do a commercial here, but you do need, I think it's important to have a partner here who has proven results, that understands your business, has a proven track record of actually achieving behavior change. That, and I'll say this, localization is so important. A minute ago I talked about whether it's an IPA or a health system you're working with, that may be market to market, or it may be within a market that you need to have the ability to localize and put in the variation that gets the appropriate outcome. It is not, and I'll say this a different way, beware of someone who opens their toolkit, their sales kit, and brings out a point solution. I wish it was that simple. It's not. But on the other side of that coin, you do have to trust someone to get that done. Your analysis should comprise insights aggregated from claims, costs, EMR, lab, and pharmacy, all aspects of the business, turned into an identifiable, clear action plan with sound framework. And again, there's very little that's a single product out of the sales kit that'll get this done. And I won't repeat myself now on that one. Okay. So the next component, organizational structure and implementation of the transformation. The organizational structure is important because if you supply information and the organization's unable to digest it or disseminate it, don't have the pieces, haven't invested in that, or they believe that they have, or they're organized around a single piece of technology, or a single item, any single item is probably inadequate to say the organization is properly structured. It's important that the organization can take the financial risk, but also clinically deal with the dissemination of information around population health. So organizational structure. Structure for success. Start with a familiar, well-defined population. I was with a health system. This has actually happened three times. And the CEO of the health system said, I know I have to go there, but I want to put a toe in the water and figure this out. Well, and I'll just say my opinion is that is a formula for disaster, a toe in the water, unless you define it this way, and that is to say, I'm responsible in my health system for six populations that within the six have common characteristics, and I want to do a toe in the water by doing one, but I'm going to be completely committed to that one population. And the clarity around that is important. The next level of that population is, do you clearly understand and are you set up so that the contracted reimbursement can be dealt with across that population? The next item is communicate early and clearly. Communicate goals. Communicate incentives. Communicate how incentives are paid and the recognition that goes with them, what processes and resources are available to achieve the goals that are being set, and then the clear communication of how each clinician is going to be measured, how they're going to be compared, and what resources and capabilities are you giving me or are at my disposal to achieve this. It needs to be clear and as simple as possible. It needs to be timely because late information is not as useful and it engenders some distrust. and it needs to be as complete and accurate. Payers and providers over the years have been at enmity and bad information. We fall back into that too fast if we don't provide good information. The services, organizational or new company structure, that's very important. And I have a point of view of all, on all of those items, and this is not the right time to go through that. Governance is very important. I work with a physician group that they do a great job. It's because there are a lot of great individual physicians who are open to direct communication, but their governance is constantly a popularity contest and is not truly based on the leadership. So we, on a regular basis, work on the leadership and the thought process, and we provide tools to the leadership of that organization. The governance couldn't be any more important for a strong organization. Support to measure contract performance and evolve contracts and incentives. The resources, infrastructure, partnering, training, the supervision, the clinical information, the communication, and the workflows are very important as we look at that. In early contracts around this, it's not uncommon for the quality measures to be variable on a year-to-year basis, so that as items and the contract to be written to accommodate that is a very important part, because frequently we write a contract, we want it to last for X number of years, and to have a discussion about it is tantamount to renegotiating the entirety of the contract. We really, in this situation, need to be more thoughtful about there is some variability that we should expect, we should anticipate, and create an expectation that it'll occur. The essential guidance is decide on the structure that best supports the physician. That has a lot to do with how they're organized, how they've associated with each other, or how you're bringing them together for risk. Implement within a subset of the business to launch in. So I'm going back to my toe in the water comment. Identify a portion of the population that you can absolutely get completely knowledgeable about, and then create a transferable knowledge base from that population to each population as you go through the process. Assure the alignment with the overall business. Agree to work, incent, train, support, inform, measure on definitive cycles. Claims information should be available available for the clinicians to see as soon as possible. That puts a lot of pressure on it being accurately. There are cycles of information that need to be available daily: admissions, discharges, pharmacy every 3 days, claims every week, financials every month. So there are different cycles. It's very important that that be done timely and accurately. That I can't overemphasize that this is the foundational. This is foundational to success. Is the right setup, the transparency, the collaboration, the connectivity, and then setting goals and meeting them.
Great. Well, thanks, Richard. We are ready for our next poll question. So to engage the audience, we would like to hear what you have to say about this question. Which services should health plans offer in order to support providers in value-based contracts? So we're looking for the best answer here. Is it A, office management functions, B, population health management functions, C, both of the above, or D, neither of the above? So we'll give the audience a few seconds here to select your best answer and press submit. All right. We are ready for the big reveal. So I think folks have selected C. This is a smart crowd, Richard.
Well, that's good. The only answer that would have been better is both of the above and much more. I think that it's very important that as we move into this type of value reimbursement, that we see that the payer has a responsibility to enable and support the workflows, the day-to-day operations in a clinician's office and caring for the total healthcare and patient population. And that includes the one-to-one encounters that they have, informing those face-to-face, and the one-to-many in terms of managing their population for the patients who aren't presenting today but may need an outreach. And the communication, the collaboration, and the way it fits in the flow of the clinician's office is very important. Those functions are critical and should incorporate data from as many sources as possible to create that population health functionality that is usable in the office and really creates a different way for clinicians to take responsibility for what they're really good at when patients are well, that they are able to monitor them and keep them well. Collaboration, connectivity, context with actionable information, one-to-one, one-to-many, is very important. So, component three, value-based care services that support office management and population health. The description, actionable information, powerful tools, and effective incentives to help providers. We want the providers to have the tools to become population health managers, where they can assume upside and downside risk, and they can deliver improved clinical and financial outcomes, even remarkably improved clinical and financial outcomes. Informed, empowered, trained to operate and manage a population, contrasted to a fee-for-service population where the clinician basically responds to a patient presenting themselves or an issue is vital in a population health management system. It requires workflow schedules, handoffs, outreach to monitor, track, and communicate with patients who aren't in the office today. And it takes actively communicating who they are, who is the most important to be reached out to, and for what reason, and providing that in a workflow that is meaningful and not distracted to the office flow and to the physician time flow is very critical. The services, office management, and I'm just going to refer to this as the workflows. That list could be as long as we wanted to make it. We could have put a lot there. And population health management, the analytics, the quality management, utilization, the management, the care management staff, and the PCP engagement. We need to, as I've said, leveraging the physician with extenders where possible. So a population health system really incorporates a team to leverage the physician. There are certain functions that can be done administrative in terms of scheduling and outreach and confirmation of follow-ups. It can be leveraged in terms of using the extenders that may or may not be there or placing extenders there. But solution systems, actions, and processes that are specifically pointed at the physician, the nurse practitioner, the office administrator, the scheduler, actually achieve those results and are built into this product offering and should be part of or it's going to get more of a negative reaction. That when you do that, behaviors begin to be modified, changes begin to occur, quality begins to improve. And I'll just make a comment here that the care team, I should have mentioned that if you have the proper outreach, a patient actively becomes part of the care team. What you don't want is for them to feel disengaged from that. Doing this, the essential guidance, selecting a partner that you trust, and I underline that because we talk about healthcare, but there's a provider economy of healthcare and there's a payer economy of healthcare. In this new, our point of view is that these have to work more closely together, taking risks together. That means that there has to be a trust or a party that brings the payer and the provider together in a way that they can trust each other. The trusted partner frequently is not the payer per se, and we can certainly fill that role as the population health, LHO as the population health facilitator in that case. All right.
We have another poll question. So, which capability is of greatest strategic importance in collaborative payer operations? Is it A, facilitating training for physicians and care teams, B, reducing hospital admission rates and emergency department visits, C, ensuring documentation and coding accuracy, or D, achieving lower MCR while maintaining high levels of patient and provider satisfaction? So again, we're looking for the best choice. We'll give the audience a few seconds to choose your answer and click submit. All right, we're pretty divided here on a couple of the answers. And we were looking for D, which is achieving lower MCR while maintaining high levels of patient and provider satisfaction.
Interesting. All of those are very important. I won't express a lot of my opinions about products that have been in healthcare for a long time. But generally, if you're able to lower the MCR, you do that with a number of the items listed above. Lowering the entire cost while improving quality and satisfaction is the ultimate measure. You can take bed days down, and having been in the industry a long time, by alternative sites of care or just getting in the way. What you want to do is look at the entire medical cost, because the effectiveness of this will be judged in the total financial return and the satisfaction of the patients and the physicians. Bed days going down is a very important contributor to that, especially those that might have been avoided either by lack of information at the ER or an alternative care site. But I think to look at it and try to control a single variable when you're looking at a population health approach, it can be difficult, and it can put a particular item too prominent and be a dissatisfier to the member and drive other costs up too quickly. A comprehensive approach is vital, and I'm in no way saying that the others aren't exceptionally important. MCR goes down also by getting revenue right and accurate and coding correctly. You can get over-focused on one area and get not the outcome you're looking. You can squeeze the bubble too hard and make either satisfaction go down or cost show up somewhere else. So, but all good answers there. So component four, collaborative payer operations that optimize business processes. The description, optimize business processes to manage costs, increase profitability and plan performance, increase membership, meet mandates for MCR contained in the ACA. In the new world with an 85% MCR requirement, it is not unlikely that relooking at the structure of how and by whom and in what way costs are incurred is a very important could be an important part of how you go forward under this. It should be on the table for consideration in any case. An example would be any delegated processes, and again, making no judgment, you have to decide if this is appropriate, whether UM or claims or care management could be delegated to a well-structured provider partner, places the information and the care, if they're incented right, much closer to the person, the people directly responsible, and it could lower costs. The transparency of information in if there's a delegation, if there's a restructuring, is an absolute necessity. These must be collaborative operations and processes so that there's no duplication, so there's no hindrance to clinical care or to the understanding and the shared incentives. The services, revenue cycle management, enrollment, plan administration, claims processing, customer service, network management, care management, compliance and contracting. That's really a familiar list if you're a payer. They're not independent of each other. They're not independent of data that can be provided to to the provider that is meaningful. They should be informed and informing both parties in this relationship. So as you think about it, they must be part of a coordinated plan. Revenue, network management, and care management actually may be more central to this than they've ever been in the past in terms of shared information, collaboration, and connection between payer and provider. So if we think on that list, if we think just do them and add a piece of software, or just do them and they can't add anything if they're not connected, potentially a wrong answer. So essential guidance. All these, everything should be considered on a comprehensive basis. A collaborative payer operates and is able to mine information out of claims, is able to understand demographics out of revenue and enrollment that are meaningful to a clinician, and should be structured into the partnership so that they create that collaborative nature, that collaborative sharing, or else there's a missed opportunity and potentially a failure in the system. The results. The collaborative payer model. Lemaire's approach to value-based health plan operations comes from our beginnings. We were purpose-built to be completely transparent to clinicians. The idea was that joint participation, and again, this was, we've been doing this for 10 years. We did not know there was going to be an Accountable Care Act. This is sort of core to our belief set. But we believed that the payers getting into basically being very good at those processes and making them transparent to the provider, and the physicians and clinicians being responsible for having more direct input on cost, quality, and outcomes on a collaborative basis produces a much better outcome. Not the enmity of I just want lower cost from the payer to the provider, and the provider always saying, I have the sicker patient, stop that. This is clearly about, if that's true, you make an adjustment. If it's not, you call it for what it is. So the model is built on a foundation of back and forth accountability, shared risk up and down in both cases, aligned patient, provider, and payer incentives, and the culture around that of, and I'm not saying nobody complains. We listen. There is, we can always improve, but listening rather than shutting that out is very important. The wellness of the patient is a central issue, and being able to report and communicate and get appropriate handoffs to get that done is very important. Process and workflow and actions are informed by both entities and exposed to both entities. A continuation on results, and I don't know whether to say I'm proud or this is great, but it is what it is, the cost side. Before incentives, and incentives in many cases are MCR before incentives, 65%. That's not to say that the rest of the MCR, which is in compliance, it is used largely to build out provider capability, extenders, and otherwise so that they become better population managers over and over. As we compare our costs to an unmanaged population, an unmanaged fee-for-service population, the costs generally run about 30% less. And that is consistent with a lot of what CMS has said is possible, but we are achieving that. The quality, Essence Healthcare, which LHO operates under contract, has for 3 years maintained a 4.5-star rating, which is very exciting when you consider the results we've produced otherwise. Patient satisfaction, overall health rating is consistently above the national average. In addition to that, we are in our footprint. I have to be clear on that. We're for EHI, we're a one market. We do work with health plans in other areas, but in the one where we have the longest history, we have the largest market share in our footprint. And I say that with some very worthy competitors. It's good to say that. We have over 97% patients seen annually, a very important issue in terms of access to health care and keeping the patients well. And the physician satisfaction, over 80%, which is, I would say, in most cases, just an unheard-of level of physician satisfaction with working with the collaborative payer. I'm going to turn it back over to Kara at this point.
Yeah, I think we're going to take some questions from the audience. I'm just going to fly through, you know, for folks on the line that are interested, just a few slides about Lumeris. Again, we will have a replay of today's webinar available for you. But for folks that are not familiar with Lumeris, I always just like to flash a few of those stats in terms of who we are and some of our key differentiators, what makes us unique in the marketplace, in terms of our proven operational excellence, multi-payer expertise, and of course, as Richard was alluding to, value-based care experience. So while we are waiting for those questions to come in, and if you do have a question of Richard, please go ahead and use the Q&A feature on the bottom right-hand side of your screen to submit your questions. And we have a few that have been coming in as we've been talking here. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with the first question. So, Richard, why do you recommend starting the risk journey with a subset of your population?
Great question. It's a large change to how payers and providers have operated, and it allows, by taking a subset but well-defined population, it provides a lens in which to measure. It provides the ability to operate against a single reimbursement model, and there's great clarity, and it provides a reference model for the rest of the populations that an organization is working with. It allows that not toe in the water overall, but deep expertise in a particular population. So I think it is a good way to approach it.
Okay, next question. Are providers really receptive to office management and population health support from payers? What's been your experience?
As a general comment, if I was in a different situation, historically, no. But to the extent that they can see that the clinical outcomes, the maintenance of health for patients that they don't necessarily have to see but can monitor and follow is very good. And our continued attention to leverage and provide the workflows that leverage them to be able to be more productive with their panels overall, they have been receptive to that. It doesn't create a deleveraging effect, but a leveraging effect. And I will say that in many cases, the physicians comment that they wanted to practice medicine this way before, where they had a little more time with each patient. They were a little more informed about the full horizontal, all the encounters they'd had with all clinicians and all information that was available. So it's been, our results have been good in that regard.
Okay, this is a related question from the group. So Richard, you talked a lot about choosing the right partner. Do you find that it's best to have a single company, a single vendor providing both office management and population health management services, or a separate partner for each function?
Well, my immediate reaction is it would be better for it to be one. When you look at the variety of the sources of data, when you look at the variety of workflows that multiple partners do create and the level of integration that has to, by nature, has to occur when you have multiple vendors, having a single vendor at the table creates synergy. It creates a more dynamic view, a more powerful set of workflows that are supported, and the success and incentive and the tracking of that gets very clear. It gets crisp. So if the opportunity, there are many cases where legacy systems will be perpetuated, and we, as we should, work with those, but given the choice, I think one vendor is better.
Okay. And a very good question from, it sounds like, a very informed listening participant. So how do we know if we should go this thing alone or outsource?
Well, I'm biased on that question. Having been in the industry a long time, there are organizations who embraced more of a collaborative course over the history of their company. They may be closer to getting to this answer. But at Lumeris, we have invested millions of dollars to create the backbone and the collaborative network of technology and evidence-based medicine that informs the workflow. And I don't know that any single organization that's not huge could have that same depth of analytics, of clinical evidence built into the system, of the ability to accommodate and coordinate data and information. The ability to get a partner and leverage their huge investment, if it works in your situation, I would say, unless you believe you've got something dramatically better, having a partner to do this, even if it's just on a consulting basis, and is better. I mean, just that independent view. I've been in a number of organizations. It's not uncommon for us to believe what we've done is the best. Sometimes an independent view of that is quite helpful, quite refreshing, and directionally not always what you expect, but good.
So is there any early information about how we can expect populations to behave based on this recommendation or set of frameworks as implemented? How are patients, you know, receptive to their providers, you know, moving to accountable care? I think that's what's in the question.
Well, I will say that if we use the member satisfaction that's been achieved at EHI, I don't want to use any anecdotes, but the overall in-depth study that CMS does, that we do through CAPS, the reaction is that they feel that they're better partnered with their physicians. They are more informed about what's going on. It is, I believe, and the intent is to make them a partner in the care delivery by keeping them more directly connected to their clinician with better information. So where we have implemented this program, we have gotten great results.
Here's a related question. Is it really possible to increase quality of care while reducing costs? So the balance of the triple aim, we know that that's, you know, a set of trade-offs, if you will. So is it possible to really increase quality of care while reducing costs? I think our results would show that.
I think definitely. I think I will give a couple of anecdotes, and they won't feel necessarily like anecdotes. But the ability for our system to, with provider partners such as an emergency room that's working in our network, to see a patient profile when a patient presents in the ER and to know their history, the outcomes, when you know whether they've got managed conditions or unmanaged conditions based on the lab results that are there, the course of care they're involved, I believe have a direct impact on that. It is not uncommon for someone to present at the ER and the attending clinicians not to know anything, and for purposes of concern and absence of information to admit them. And I'll just say that as an outcome, that may not be terrible, but it's unnecessary, and most people I know do not like to be in the hospital if they don't have to be. So that is a simple one, but the ability for a specialist who's involved in someone's care to see the full horizontal or the appropriate amount, or for an institution to be able to see what's managed and who the care is being taken, who's been the attending or the PCP or who they're going to be transitioned to, is very important, and it has resulted in better outcomes.
Okay. So as a reminder, if you have a question for Richard, go ahead and use the Q&A feature on the bottom right-hand side of your screen to submit your questions. So we do have a question, it looks like, from an existing customer of Lumeris, asking about how the accountable delivery system platform fits into sort of this model.
Okay.
An existing
customer. I'm trying to imagine who that is. Literally, the workflows, the communications, the structures from payer to clinician, the ADSP is the process, the system, the data that informs those workflows. It is, if you will, the inner workings of how that is connected. It becomes ubiquitous. It's a SaaS-based product, so it can be all the, if you have the role-based security to be in it, you can look at it on any device at any time. It's available, it's populated, and the ADSP is dynamic in terms of incorporating, giving context, and constantly is looking for gaps in care and informing those for the clinicians that are involved with those patients, informing opportunities for further management of chronic conditions, or looking for individuals who haven't had access recently who might need predictably to have that in the future. But the ADSP is the technology structure that enables this entire solution. It's very dynamic. We've been developing it for a number of years with hundreds of millions of dollars of investment here. It can aggregate data from labs, pharmacies, EMRs, and claims and payer and match it with the demographics of the member to create a very usable, actionable, contextually correct set of communications around the care on those individuals. It also is the backbone and the way that we keep the physicians informed, the providers informed of where they're operating against their goals, and keeps that in front of them. They have access to that constantly, and it's a motivator that they can see where they are compared to the contractual goals that they're operating to.
Okay. So this is going to be our last question given our time here, but what are the other ways that LHO supports physician behavior change? So I think you alluded to this somewhere in the middle of the presentation about this notion of transparency and sort of helping physicians sort of see how they're performing on those measures in their value-based contract. So what are some of the other ways beyond technology that LHO supports that change?
I don't know who asked that, but that's a great question. The to be one day a volume-oriented provider and then begin to move into the process of population healthcare, there are some behaviors and some processes, not only for the physicians, but their office staff and those other clinicians, specialists, and otherwise they work with. We operate under a program we call the 9 C's, where we, in a very prescriptive training process, show those behaviors by functional area within a clinician's office as to what's done daily, what can be done daily, weekly, monthly for those participating in this program. Additionally, we do training. We do on a periodic basis. We provide the tremendous amounts of access to data. Over a period of time, physicians focus on that piece that they find most, those reports they find most functional and helpful, but they at any point in time can look at the detail and understand what's driving their numbers, what's driving their clinical outcomes, and how the referral partners and their peers are functioning in, not in detail with their peers, but certainly as a comparative benchmark. So there are a number of ways to encourage and manage behavior change that are very important, and this is about behavior modification and moving toward it.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for participating in our webinar event today, Health Plan Operations, Identifying the Definitive Components for Business and Care Delivery Excellence. Again, you will receive a link to the replay of the webinar recording today, and we appreciate your wonderful questions. Thank you very much.